Good afternoon. Nice to be back and have the opportunity to learn together. I apologize for the last week prior to Pesach. I got involved in an emergency on the phone and could not get off in time for our call. So I apologize to those who called in anyway. I wanted to share, and maybe it'll be a little, this particular Dvar Torah will be a little longer than the usual snippets that we have. It's a very beautiful and very powerful idea related to this week's parsha, also related to Yom HaShoah. And it also is in terms of the derech, in terms of an approach to Torah and to Midrashim, it takes a medrash that on the surface seems to really what would be called a medrash pli, a medrash that makes no sense. And when we look deeper, we understand the beauty of what Chazal were trying to relate. So the medrash tells us that Eov heard and he was terrified. And the question is, what did he hear? The medrash says that Eov heard about the death of the two sons of Aaron HaKohen, Nadab and Avihu, and he was overcome with this dread. He was overcome with this fear. The question is, what on earth is the connection? What did Eov hear about the deaths of Nadab and Avihu that so terrified him? Why would their unfortunate demise at the beginning of the parsha be a reason for Eov to be so afraid? So we need to back up. We need to understand what exactly, or what are perhaps, was the chait, the sin of Nadav and Avihu. So Chazal and different Midrashim offer a wide range of opinions, precisely what the chait was. The Abar Benel offers, I think, 10 different options. Chazal, again, mostly based on Chazal. Chazal offers several. Yaakov Shimoni says that their only sin was this one. So maybe that's why Chazal spent so much time trying to figure out what it was, because on their level, their tzidkos, the greatness of these men, we're not trying to make them look bad by adding all these different sins and trying to understand what it is, but the opposite is true. We're trying to understand what they did wrong to learn from their lives, to learn from their mistakes. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daphne and Beis Amud Aleph, offers the following suggestion. The Gemara tells us that Nadav and Avihu were going for a walk. And they were walking outside and they saw Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron. And Nadav says to Avihu, "When will these two Zikain and these two elders die so that you and I can take over as the leaders? When will we be the ones who are in charge? When are we going to take over the leadership of Moshe and Aharon?" And Hashem responded to them, let's see who buries who. The lack of respect that they showed for the Gedolei Hador, for Moshe and Aharon, that was the reason that they were punished. Now look very closely at the Gemara and you'll see something remarkable. The Gemara says that Nadav said this to Avihu. The Gemara does not tell us that Avihu said a word. Avihu did not respond, so why did they both get punished for the disrespect of Nadav? Nadav should have been punished. This fire should have come down from heaven, consumed Nadav, and Avihu should have walked away. And the answer is that through his silence, by not protesting, by Avihu not saying, "Nadav, what are you talking about? You can't talk like that about Moshe, about Aaron, about the Gedolei Hador. Yes, we strive. Maybe we want this, but to speak in such terms about the Gedolei Hador, you can't do that." By not protesting, Avihu was judged the same way as Avihu was judged the same way as Nadav. We have a concept in halacha of shtika kehoda. The silence is consent. That's what's happening here. With that, who was Eov? Who was Eov? The Gemara in Sotan Daf Yed Aleph tells us that Paro had three advisors at the time when he was trying to decide what to do about the Jewish problem of his time. Who were his three advisors? Bilam, Yisro, and Eov. And the idea of destroying the Jews was raised by Bilam, and he thought that was the best approach. And Yisro strongly disagreed, expressed his feelings to Paro. What about Eov? Eov disagreed with Paro. He disagreed with this idea of Bilam, of trying to destroy the Jewish people, but decided that it's better not to get involved in an argument with Paro. So he kept silent. The Margolia Sayam on that Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daphnin Beis, and I heard this also from Rabbi Lau Shlita, again another Yom HaShoah connection, certainly Rabbi Lau spoken YU many years ago, and he said That was the cause of Eov's sudden fear. Eov had assumed that by keeping silent, he was being safe. I'm not doing anything wrong. Bilam is the one. Paro is the one. Okay, Yisro maybe was a little bit more of a man. He stood up, and then he was more of a gavri. He was more of a person. He stood up to it. And Eov assumed that by keeping silent, he was going to be safe. But once Eov saw what happened to Aaron's sons, not just to Nadav, but also to Avihu, he became terrified. Because not only was Nadav, who actually was disrespectful, punished, but Avihu as well. The lesson of the Bnei Aharon was that even the silent partner is punished the same as the proponent of the evil. Eov became fearful, full of dread, upon hearing the deaths of Aharon's sons, because he realized that he was guilty of the very same thing. You know, Elie Wiesel once said, there may be times when we are powerless to prevent injustice, but there must never be a time when we fail to protest. We never know the power of our words, and we sometimes tend to underestimate our sphere of influence. What can one person do? I can't convince people. There are times when silence is appropriate. What was Aharon's reaction to the death of Nadav and Avihu, that very same death? Vayidom Aharon. Aharon was silent. He accepted the decision from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from the perfect judge. You have to be makabel certain things. You have to take them in. But you have to think what the reaction is going to be. And there are times when we have to be quiet, and there are times when we have to stand up, but it has to be a balanced approach. It has to be something that we think about, something that we consider in making the determination. When do we speak, and when do we not speak? When are we guilty because we haven't expressed what's so important, and when there are Jews who are suffering, there are people in the world who are suffering, and we could say something and figure, oh, it's just easier not to. Versus there are sometimes yisurim, unfortunate things happen to us, and we have to accept what happens. This is the lesson. I think it's definitely apropos for Yom HaShoah, but a beautiful lesson. You see the beauty Chazal tuck away, a pasuk that says Eov was terrified, and connected to the sin of Nadav and Avihu was for this very point, that Nadav and Avihu's silence was, or Avihu's silence was why he too was guilty, and that's what Eov was nervous about as well. Also looking at Nadav and Avihu, Rashi tells us that they're called Bnei Banav, they're called Banav Hanosarim, the children who are left. Why are they called the children that were left, the remaining sons? So Rashi says that all of Aaron's sons were included in the decree that came about after he participated in the Chet HaEgel, and they should have all been destroyed. But Moshe, through his tefillah, was able to stave off half of it. Elazar and Itamar are referred to as Aaron's remaining sons because they were spared from that decree. But if you think about what we just said, there's so many different averos of Nadav and Avihu. So what does that have to do with the Chet of Aaron? Were Nadav and Avihu punished for their own sin? So why does it sound like they're being punished for the sin of Aaron and Cohen? It's a strange dynamic. We just spoke about one option at length of what the sin of Nadav and Avihu was. And we said that there are so many other options. So was it their own sin? Or was it because Aaron sinned with the Negel Azav? What is Rashi talking about? So it's a beautiful idea from Moshe Tversky, Hashem Yinkom Domo. And he suggested, based on a comment of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the pasuk says that describing Hashem in Hazino, right, Hatzur Tamim Paalo Kichol Derachav Mishpat Kel Amunah Vein Avad Tzadik Yashar. We praise Hashem as being perfect; he's without corruption. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, "Is that really a praise? Oh, this judge is not corrupt." You walk over somebody, you know, I want to praise a person, you know, you're not corrupt. That's a very strange way. Maybe it might be true, but that is the praise itself. So Rishon Salanter suggests that Pasuk is trying to contrast the Midas Hadin, the way that justice is meted out by heaven and by a Beis Din, even a correct Beis Din on earth. Because when a Beis Din imposes a sentence down here, they have no obligation, nor are they allowed, to take into account what the repercussions of their psak are going to be on all the other people connected to the person upon whom they have to decide the person's fate right now. And if somebody deserves whatever that punishment is, and it's going to have a negative impact on others, that's not part of the Beis Din's calculation. And of course it will. That's not the calculation. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not like that. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposes a decree, there's nothing crooked about it whatsoever. No one is even connected suffers unnecessarily. Hashem takes into account all the people connected that are going to be pained as well. And somehow that suffering is for something on their end. So yes, in the end, Nadav and Avihu certainly were punished for their own wrongdoing, but why did Aaron suffer? He lost two sons. Oh. That's because of his mistake. That's because of Aaron's mistake. Whenever we hear of suffering of somebody else and it impacts us, so it's not just, if we feel bad for somebody else, but it's something that we should think about. It's something we should take to heart, that if it's impacting us, then it's our responsibility to make some sort of cheshbon and nefesh as well, to make some sort of calculation, to make sure that, in fact, the reason that we are, again, we never know why things happen. We don't try to figure out why. But whenever something happens, it happens for a reason. And if we find any area that we can fix up, that we can be misakin, that we can improve on, then none of that suffering is for naught. One final point, also related to the very same pasuk. So I mentioned on Yontif in some of the minyanim that there seems to be a contradiction in psukim. That when it comes to the Yamsev, it says that after the water came back, it says, when it comes to the Egyptians, lo nishar bohem ad achad, that only one, the way Rashi understands the pasuk, only one remained, referring to Paro, that he was around to be able to tell the world about what happened and the miracles of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What we say in Ezra Savosainu, in before Shemon Esrei, every day, and based on Pasuk in Tehillim, it says, Echad mehem lo nosar, that nobody remained. So which one is it? It seems to be a contradiction. Did one remain, or did nobody remain? So the suggestion that was brought from the Malbim, I did not have a chance to see it inside, but there was a suggestion that came from the Malbim that you have to look at the difference in the word. There's a difference between the word nishar and the word nosar. Lo nishar bohem ad achad, only one remains. When something is nishar, it's left over intentionally. Paro was left over intentionally for the purpose of giving over and tang over the nisim and the praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Echad mehem lo nosar, that nobody remained. Nosar means nobody escaped. Nobody managed to sneak away. And that's true. Nobody did. And that's the difference between nishar and nosar. Nishar is something which is left over intentionally. Nosar is something which is not intentional. The difficulty is, so what does it mean that nibanav ha-nosarim? Right, what we just said is that the two sons of Aaron were left. It says nosarim, it shouldn't have been nisharim. They were left over. HaKadosh Baruch Hu left them over on purpose. So I don't know. I was just thinking earlier that maybe we have to tweak the idea slightly, that nishar isn't just about leaving over intentionally, but it means it's a language of significance. This is a significance to attach to what is left over, as opposed to nosar, which is the meat of the korban, which is left over. It's insignificant. It's trying to put it down a level. If we understand it that way, then the Rashi becomes important. It's echad mibanav hanosarim. We don't want to think that it's because of the greatness of the sons that remained, of Elazar and Isamar, that they survived. It's not nishar. But Moshe Rabbeinu, if he was tefillah, was able to stave off part of the decree. So although they survived, maybe Nosar is a language of a little bit of grayusa, a little bit of a demotion, and that it was purposeful, obviously, but to indicate that it was not because of their chashivos, it wasn't because of something that they did. They use a term which does not connote as much chashivos as Nishar. Maybe that's why it says Nosar. Use the key, see, look over throughout the Chumash, and maybe notice these sharashim of Nishar and Nosar, it seems to be the same thing. We can see how it works. I'm happy to hear any comments. Wishing everybody a wonderful Shabbos, and hopefully the weather will warm up as well.